ABC Radio Australia.
This morning, Papua New Guineans are beginning what is expected to be a tumultuous few days and even weeks in politics as pressure mounts on the Prime Minister Peter O'Neill to stand down from the position. Lobbying intensified over the weekend with two camps gathering at two major hotels on opposite sides of the capital, Port Moresby, each announcing that they had the numbers that would give them the majority in the 111-seat parliament. It all followed another series of MPs resigning on Friday, including three senior ministers.
I think the country must congratulate this brand of leaders for coming out, foregoing privileges of being as ministers in government.
We leaders must learn to listen. And when we are listening and they are crying, and mipla leader passing my na yao, mipla no leader ya.
We have a government that is governed by one man, for one man, for his benefit and the benefit of his friends. Papua New Guinea is sick and will get sicker if we don't change. We can fix it. We have the medicine.
But the voices of some of those in the opposition camp now. Well, Prime Minister Peter O'Neill's yet to respond, but he did receive the crucial public backing over the weekend of his Deputy Prime Minister, Charles Abel, who's reported to have been among those who, in a party caucus meeting last week, asked the PM to stand down.
If we all played politics, if we all aspired to be Prime Ministers, I think it would make the job of being a Prime Minister and the job of bringing development even more difficult. And so it is my responsibility to stand by my brothers in this party, a party that we spent a lot of time establishing, despite some of the concerns that I have, and including my brothers that have gone across to the other side. And those concerns are legitimate, but ultimately we've got to stick together as a team.
Charles Abel there. Well, this has all come to a head with Parliament to resume tomorrow. So has the end come for Peter O'Neill's prime ministership after 7 years at the helm? I put that question to Michelle Nayahumui-Rooney, who's a research fellow at the Australian National University.
I think it's a very fluid situation and a very interesting situation. Interestingly, we haven't seen Peter O'Neill make any public statement in the last few days, which means there must be very intense negotiations, no doubt, going on. But I thought that was quite an interesting thing to observe, that he hasn't made any comment. I think it's very fluid, and knowing Papua New Guinea politics, it's early days, and we won't really know until the floor of the parliament. They're on the floor of the parliament. I wouldn't call him out yet. I wouldn't say he's out yet.
Well, Peter O'Neill has been prime minister for 7 years. Why do you think people are now speaking out, citing mistrust that's obviously been going on for quite some time? We did see recently an agreement signed for the second phase of an LNG project in the resource-rich Highlands region, and we have seen many of these members who've resigned cite that and their concerns with that agreement as a reason. Has it just come to a head now? They had enough?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Certainly, I think the Papua LNG and the lack of consultation in terms of how they've led the negotiations, I think that has been a major issue that might have triggered the current fallout. That's probably been simmering for some time. And I think another important factor in terms of understanding Peter O'Neill within his own electoral base is also that another LNG project, the Hela LNG project, has actually failed to deliver the kind of development promises that he sort of banked on earlier on in his prime ministership. So the failure of that one to deliver, plus lack of consultation now, certainly would have sort of created that mistrust in his leadership.
PNG is well known for its big man politics. It's often about personality and allegiances and where you're traditionally from. And of course, there have been really crucial ties between the Highlander politicians. And we saw that start to crack when James Marape, the now former finance minister, resigned from his position a few weeks back. And of course, he was a close ally of Peter O'Neill, coming from a similar area. Do you think it is unusual that we're seeing these sorts of division between these big men in politics?
I don't think it's unusual in PNG politics because this kind of realignment has happened historically in PNG politics. So these ties are also fluid. And so what's happening is probably a realignment of a certain power base, again, related to this mistrust. If he hasn't delivered or he's failed to keep people that are close to him happy or delivered on promises that were made, then that realignment would happen.
You've recently written some of your observations about why you think Peter O'Neill has maintained this hold on power and held the position for 7 years. And you cite the Manus refugee processing deal as one of those. How do you think that has helped him hold on to or maintain his position as PM?
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting aspect of Peter O'Neill's prime ministership compared to previous prime ministers. He agreed to the Manus Island Centre very soon after he came into power, and it has shaped, in many ways, unlike previous prime ministers, it has shaped Australia's own engagement with Papua New Guinea, in the sense that people, commentators have, not only me, but others have also said that it's undermined Australia's traditional role that Australia used to have in terms of talking about good governance and anti-corruption. Some of the issues around Manus Island have sort of emboldened Peter O'Neill and his government to sort of disregard issues around good governance and corruption more, and have undermined Australia's ability to call it out. And I think in the recent media articles coming out of Australia that have sort of highlighted some of the issues around lack of transparency in terms of how contracts are given, all these issues, I think, work to undermine any form of accountability that Australia may hold Peter O'Neill to. And in that sense, it's emboldened him.
You say the Manus deal has emboldened Peter O'Neill. I wonder too about other key areas where we've really seen flourish under Peter O'Neill's leadership. For example, China's growing influence and interest in PNG. We also saw PNG host the APEC summit there last year. And so much of Peter O'Neill's prime ministership had been focused on APEC.
I think absolutely. I think the issue about this sort of two issues, the issue around APEC leading up to APEC, there was between 2013, again, around the time Peter O'Neill came into Parliament and APEC, there was significant construction works that went into preparation for APEC. And as we all know, construction work also involves a lot of funding, in the sense that there may have been more funds available for people to bolster people's power positions, issuing of contracts. That would have been a factor. APEC certainly would have put Peter O'Neill in the international sphere, the limelight a bit more, which would have given him more confidence. China's intensification in Papua New Guinea as well as the regions is important because it provides Peter O'Neill and the government an alternative source of support, source of funds to Australia, which has been the traditional source of sort of funding for PNG. It has emboldened him, I think, and his associates around him in ways that differ to previous prime ministers.
And Michelle, if there is a new government that's formed in the next days and coming weeks, it's highly likely that those who are in the senior positions will be people who have defected from Peter O'Neill's government and cabinet in the last little while. So with so many familiar faces, how can Papua New Guineans, or will they be able to be guaranteed that things will be different? Is it possible for them to lead a different type of government with just a change of leader or leadership team?
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest questions going into this coming few days and weeks. Another thing is that he would have been leading with quite a very close set of political alliances. And we need to remember that these associates and actors would have been like O'Neill in the sense that they've got a vested interest in not only the outcomes of if there's a new government, but also who stands to lose power as a change, even if they form a new government. And I think a very interesting thing to keep an eye on is what would be exposed as a result of change. So my sense is that because there have been quite a few long-standing corruption allegations and investigations that they've managed to suppress, and I think there's a lot of people who'll be watching what's unfolding and thinking what might be exposed or brought to the surface if there's any change in government.